Hold on. There we go. We have started. So the title of today's class is Four Sons, Four Questions, and Five Cups. The most interesting part of that title and the focus of the class is on the five cups. So if I told you about five cups on the Seder night, you'd presumably start thinking of the four cups that we drink, and then the Koshal Aliyahu, that's an almost ubiquitous minhag, to leave a fifth cup on the table. I'm sorry?
Yes, we always do.
Right. So it's almost ubiquitous. I think Yemenites don't, and for reasons we may get to a little bit later. But it's almost ubiquitous to have the fifth cup. So today we're going to talk a little bit about just the background behind the mitzvah of Arba Kosot on the Seder night, the four cups of wine. Then we're going to discuss the place that a fifth cup of wine may or may not have in that equation. And following that, we're going to conclude with, I think, a very interesting anecdote about the Maharal's position on this. The Maharal is a 16th century Jewish philosopher, Rabbi Yehuda Loeb ben Bezalel. He's most famously known for the legends, I don't want to say legends, I don't want to bias anyone, about his having created a golem to protect the Jewish community in Prague. And he has a sort of fascinating little anecdote about his position on this issue, which we'll get to by the end of our lesson today. Okay, I'll say for the audience, please feel free to interrupt at any time. It's much more fun for me when I'm interrupted with questions and observations and comments. So please do that. Okay, part one, the introduction, a little bit of the background. So as we know, there is a mitzvah of drinking four cups of wine on the night of the Seder. It's brought in the first Mishnah in Masechet, in the 10th parak of Masechet Pesachim. It starts with Arvei Pesachim, and at the end, it talks about V'afilu ani shebi Yisrael lo yochal ad sheyesev. Even a poor person should not eat until he does haseba, until he leans. Meaning, even a poor person has to act as though he is a free person during this time. And for our purposes, V'lo yifchetu lo me arba kosot shal yayin. And he should not have fewer than four cups of wine at the Seder. V'afilu min hatamchoi. Even if he has to go begging from the tamchoi, which is this a communal stuck institution, still he has an obligation of four cups of wine. So the four cups of wine is a serious obligation that isn't, obviated by poverty. Meaning, even if you're poor, you still have to keep the mitzvah. There's
a question.
Please.
I have a question. Okay, so how will he know that he will need this? In other words, he has to prepare in advance by going and getting enough wine so he'll be able to have at least four cups and maybe the fifth cup for Elijah?
That's exactly correct. That's a great observation, right? These are the kind of, not only is it a mitzvah when you hit the Seder night, here you have a mitzvah of preparation.
Yes.
Before the mitzvah of Arba Kosot, you have to prepare yourself to be able to fulfill that mitzvah. That's a very sharp observation and not something we're going to be dealing with for right now, but that's a very good point. So that just, parenthetically, there's a Gemara in a different part of a different tractate in Masechet Nedarim that quotes Rabbi Yehuda, who, was discussing alcohol and drinking in various contexts. And he makes a comment that he would drink the four cups of wine on the Seder night, and then he would have a headache until Shavuot, 7 weeks later. So, it appears that even though, the wine may cause headaches, maybe hangovers, still there is that mitzvah. I'll put in brackets for now that if there's actually a health concern or if someone's concerned about their ability to keep this mitzvah, that something one to discuss with their local Orthodox rabbi or not their visiting scholar from New York. But it's just worth keeping that in mind. The mitzvah is taken seriously, even to the point of some amount of personal distress by Rabbi Yehuda. Why do we drink four cups of wine? What's the symbolism of the four cups? So that appears in the second source in the Talmud Yerushalmi, the Jerusalem Talmud, a commentary on the Mishnah. It brings four reasons, and throughout the Gemara, the Midrashim, we have a number of other reasons. The most famous of which is actually the first reason brought down in this passage. The Gemara asks, Minayin arba kosot, how do we know that there are four kosot, or what do the four kosot of wine symbolize? Rabbi Yochanan Barabi Binaya keneged arba geulot. They line up with the four lishonot of geula, the four languages of redemption that are used at the beginning of the discussion of the Exodus. The pasuk says, you know, Lachin amor li bnei Yisrael, ani Hashem v'hotziti etchem, etc. And most importantly, it lists them here, v'hotziti, v'hitzalti, v'ga'alti, v'lakachti. These are the four lashonot. I will extract them, I will take them out of Egypt, I will save them, I will redeem them, and then I will take them. All languages are being redeemed from Egypt, and these four cups symbolize those four languages. That's the primary reason that we'll focus on, but I'll share a couple of others that are worth bearing in mind for our own Seder experiences. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, please.
So basically, these are four adverbs.
The four verbs.
But, okay.
Right, they're four verbs that God uses to describe his action of redeeming the Jewish people. So possibility number two brought in this text. Rabbi Yehuda ben Levi Amar, Keneged Arba'a Kosot Shel Paro. If we go back to the story of Yosef and Paro's dreams, there are four references to Paro's cup, that the cupbearer would fill with wine and had his dreams about filling with wine. And there are four uses there, and that symbolizes four cups. So there's a correlation there for some reason. Option number three, Rabbi Levi says, Keneged Arba'a Malchuyot. It refers to the four kingdoms. These four kingdoms that are referred to are the four kingdoms that, over at least early Jewish history, had oppressed the Jewish people. This is Babel, Persia, Greece, and then Rome, these four major kingdoms. In our history, we had many more, but these are the four to keep in mind. I'm not sure if the second is Persia, actually. I'll put that to the side for a moment. And the fourth explanation, there are four explanations for the four cups here, is that it is Keneged Dalet Kosot Shel Puranut. It corresponds to the four cups of payback, of revenge, almost. Shekadosh Baruch Hu Atid L'Hashkot Et Umot Aholam. That God will eventually use to sort of get revenge against the nations of the world. There are four places in Tanakh where the imagery of a cup of revenge, a cup of anger, is used as part of God's punishment of wicked nations, and the four cups correlate to those. So the latter three explanations are interesting just to bear in mind, but we're going to focus on the first one, which is the four languages of redemption. It's sort of commonly observed that if you look at the verses in the Torah that include these four languages of redemption, that there are actually five viable candidates in this passage. The pasuk reads, "Lachen amor livnei Yisrael." I won't bother translating because it's not so germane for our purposes. But it mentions, "V'hotzeiti etchem mitachas levot Mitzrayim." I'll remove you from Egypt, from the the struggle and the affliction in Egypt. "V'hitzalti etchem me'avod etchem," and I will save you from your work. "V'ga'alti etchem b'zor nituyah u'vishvatim gzolim," and I will redeem you with an outstretched arm. "V'lakachti etchem li la'am," and I will take you to be a nation to me. These four languages are the ones that are mentioned. But in the immediate following verse, we have a fifth language, "V'heveti." I will bring you, "V'heveti etchem el ha'aretz asher nasati et edi latetota, l'Avraham l'Yitzchak u'l'Yaakov." I will take you to the land that I promised, that I've given to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, our forefathers. And the open question, or the weirdness, is, why is there a fifth language of redemption that doesn't correspond to a cup of wine? And that's where we'll move to our second section, which is, does it correspond to a cup of wine? Is there a fifth cup that we drink on the Seder night? And that question is something that is dealt with in a passage later on in the Talmud in Pesachim.
Yeah, okay. I have a question.
Please, this is a perfect place for a question.
Okay. So the four languages or the four verbs refer, they're kind of in past tense. The hoveti seems to me like that's future.
I'm a grammar nerd. I will admit that. So please take what I say with that framing. But these, they appear to be past tense verbs, and it's absolutely correct. But there's a form in biblical grammar called a vav ha-hipuch. I don't know what the technical grammatical term is, but I guess it literally translates to a reversing vav. When a vav appears before certain words, it flips their tense from past to future or from future to past.
Oh. Okay.
Right, so hoseti looks like a past tense, but you're right, it gets flipped to a future tense. It's more common in the reverse. The word vayomer, for example, means he said. But the word yomar, yomar, is a future tense verb.
Yes.
You put the vav in front and it flips it to a past tense. So this is the same thing, but in the reverse.
I see.
Yeah, so I'm very grateful for the opportunity to share some biblical grammar. This was a great day for me. thank you for that. Following that rule, all five of these verbs are in the past flipped to the future. So it's not, I took them to be a nation. This passage is from the beginning when God's sort of instructing Moshe to first go to the people and inform them of the redemption. But it really refers to the future. I will take them to be a nation to me. I will take them to the land. So yes, thank you for that. Okay. So to the Talmud that talks about the four cups of wine. There's one passage that's most important for our discussion. The passage in Psachim says, Tanu Rabbanan, the rabbis taught, Revi'i gomar alav et ha'halel. The fourth cup of wine is used to conclude the halal. We finish saying halal, and then we drink the fourth cup of wine. And then the Gemara says, Ve'omer halal ha'gadol. Now, halal ha'gadol refers not to halal that we're used to saying on Rosh Hashanah, and on Hanukkah, and all the other times when we say halal. It refers to a certain parak of Tehillim, parak kuf lamed vav, which we say every week, for Shabbat Psukei Dezimra. The parak begins, allow me just flip to the right page. It's the parak that begins, Hodu Lashem Kitov Kili Olam Chasdo. Hodu Lelohe Elohim Kili Olam Chasdo. Where each pasuk begins with some praise of God, Kili Olam Chasdo, over and over again. And that's something that we actually do say on the Seder night. So according to this passage of the Gemara, we say halal, we drink a fourth cup of wine, and we say halal ha'gadol as well, and there's some other, you know, smaller paragraphs that we say as part of it that the Gemara deals with that we're not so interested in for our purposes. There is a very sort of cryptic Rashi commentary on that Gemara. Rashi says, Hachi Garsinan, the following is our text of the Gemara, Revi'i gomer alav et ha'halel. We finish the, we use the fourth cup as a conclusion to halal, v'omer alav halal ha'gadol, and we say halal ha'gadol on it. And it's copied also in the Rashbam. The Rashbam was Rashi's grandson. He has an almost identical comment. Hachi Garsinan, Hey Gimel is an abbreviation for Hachi Garsinan, this is our text, Revi'i gomer alav et ha'halel, v'omer alav halal ha'gadol. And it appears in Tosfot as well. Here's my question. Here's why I called it a cryptic Rashi. How is the text that Rashi brings, his version of the text, different from the text that we have in our version of the Gemara? If you look at these two texts, they're almost identical. Right? There is one difference. Do you notice the difference?
I'm looking.
It's very subtle. The difference is one word. He says, Ve'omer alav halal ha'gadol, and not Ve'omer halal ha'gadol. But that difference isn't significant. That's not a meaningful difference in terms of the interpretation of the text. Right? So why, if Rashi's just trying to communicate to us the same text as the one that we have, it's very strange he would preface it with, this is our version of the text. Of course it's our version of the text. This is the text that we have. This, I think, is an example of Rashi protesting a bit too much and revealing something. Right? What can we infer from the fact that Rashi tells us this is our version of the text?
That there are other versions.
That there's some other version of the text, exactly. And this gets me into another area that I enjoy, comparing different versions of the text of the Gemara. But it's recorded in other commentaries, other version, other Rishonim, other early commentaries on the Gemara. The one I brought here is the commentary of the Rif, of Yitzhak Alfasi. He sort of has a digest of the Gemara, you know, sort of summarizing the conclusions of the Gemara into its most concise halachic form. And he says, Ravi gomar lav et ha'halel v'omar lav birkat ashir. Birkat ashir, we're going to ignore that for now. And then he brings another version. Tanu Rabbanan, Hamishi Omer Alav. I'm sorry, is that. Do you have to get that?
I'm gonna let it go.
Okay. So the Rif brings another a version of the text that says, Tanu Rabbanan, the rabbis taught, Hamishi Omer Alav Halal Hagadol. Divrei Rabbi Tarfon. We say Halal Hagadol not on its own, not after the fourth cup. We say it with a fifth cup of wine. Right? Hamishi, the fifth, as opposed to the fourth, the third, the second. So we have at least some version that's preserved in some Rishonim.
I have to call you back in about a half hour. Okay.
We have a version that's preserved in some commentaries that actually has Rabbi Tarfon, who is someone in the Gemara. He's not a nobody. He's someone that we know. And he says, we drink a fifth cup of wine on the Seder night. So we don't anymore, and we're going to have to figure out why we don't drink a fifth cup of wine if there is such a position in the Gemara. But we can't dismiss the fifth cup of wine as a real halachic position. It appears explicitly in some versions of the Gemara. Just for fun, for color, I also chose to bring a couple of preserved manuscripts that we have, early manuscripts of the Gemara, and both versions that are preserved in the medieval commentaries are also preserved in the medieval versions of the text that we have. So, for example, this first text is the Vatican 109 manuscript. These are both manuscripts that are preserved in the Vatican. So this one says, Tanu Rabbanan, Chamishi Omer Alav Halal Hagadol, Divrei Rabbi Tarfon. That duplication is a little bit weird, but this version says, the fifth cup of wine has Halal Hagadol associated with it. However, in the Vatican 134 manuscript, a different Talmud manuscript, Tanu Rabbanan, Revi Gomer Alav Et HaHalal. This one's a little fuzzier, I'm sorry if it's a little bit harder to read.
Oh, yeah. So this one, Halel
HaGadol
is said with a fourth cup rather than just the fifth cup.
Exactly. So these two versions of the text existed in the time of the Rishonim, in the, I guess earlier Middle Ages, and don't seem to be preserved later, but we'll get to that. And they're also preserved in the versions of the text and in the halachic positions of the medieval commentaries, the Rishonim. So we know now that there is at least some version. Now, if you were a Rashi, and you only had, you thought that this version, okay, let me take a step back. Okay, nowadays we don't have a custom of drinking a fifth cup of wine. Yemenites do, for reasons I'll still get to. Some communities in Italy, I think, still do. But mostly, it's gone. So how do you explain that there is no fifth cup of wine? So one possibility is Rashi and Rashbam. We agree with them that their text of the Gemara is correct. There is no text, according to them, there's no valuable text that says that there is a fifth cup of wine. A fifth cup of wine is wrong, and so we drink four cups of wine in accordance with them. But if you have this version of the text, we have to explain why we don't drink a fifth cup of wine. What happened to it? And I think there are a number of perspectives that appear in different commentaries in the Rishonim as well. I'll try to cover some of them relatively briefly, without getting into too much detail, just to preserve our time, our scheduling. But they're worth keeping in mind as they relate to our current practice. So the first perspective that I'll look at, I'll scroll down actually, is the perspective of Rabbi Zrachia Halevi, the Baal Hamor. He lived in southern France. It'll be worth noting where people live geographically. The position that rejects five cups of wine entirely is northern France, mostly. Whereas these other positions are Spanish, southern French, they appear in different regions, which is, from an intellectual history perspective, kind of interesting. So the first perspective is this Baal Hamor, Rabbi Zrachia Halevi, where he says, the Anan lo chazina hai minhaga behalal hagadol. We don't see this practice of drinking a fifth cup of wine anymore. It is no longer our practice. De aliba de Rabbi Tarfon hu de itle kos hay. Because it is only Rabbi Tarfon's position who says that we drink a fifth cup. But if we go back to our Mishnah that we saw at the very beginning, the Mishnah says, lo yifchetu lo me arba kosot. We don't have fewer than 4 cups. So our Mishnah says 4 cups, Rabbi Tarfon says 5 cups, and we follow our Mishnah. The Kaimalan Ketana Didan, Delitle Ela Dalet Kosot. We follow our Tana, the Mishnah, and not Rabbi Tarfon, and so we only drink 4 cups. So 5 cups was a possibility, and like many possibilities that are raised in the Gemara, it's rejected in favor of a more authoritative possibility. According to this perspective, there would be no fifth cup at all. It would have disappeared. But he does mention that, you know, if you want to drink a fifth cup, that's fine, but according to this interpretation, we wouldn't have a fifth cup. Okay. Version 2 appears in a very unknown Rishon called Rav Yosef Tuv Elam. He's also French, so closer to this area where 5 cups wouldn't have existed. And he says, She'im hu ta'av lishtot, ya'aseh kos chamishi. If you desire to drink more, if you need another cup of wine, if you're still thirsty after 4 cups of wine at the end of a long seder, then you drink a fifth cup, and you presumably say halal ha'gadol with it. So the Mishnah that says 4 cups is authoritative, the minimum is 4 cups, and that's the entire mitzvah. If you want a fifth cup, sure, have a fifth cup. There's no problem with having a fifth cup, but having 4 is your mitzvah, and the fifth is if you're thirsty. It's something that you want to do, great. But it's also not part of the mitzvah, and that would again sort of explain our contemporary practice where a fifth cup has a sort of minor role to play. It's not really relevant to us. And so that those positions line up better with that. There are, however, other positions. For example, we have this position of the Rambam. He's, you know, one of the great Spanish, eventually Egyptian commentaries, and he says, V'yesh lo limzo kus chamishi v'lomar alav halal hagadol. You should pour a fifth cup and say halal hagadol with it. And then he says, V'kos ze eno chova. This cup is not an obligation. You don't have to do it. Kimo arba koso, not like the 4 prior ones, which are obligatory. And so according to this perspective, 4 cups is obligatory, and a fifth cup is good. He says, yesh lo limzo, you should do it. He doesn't say it's a mitzvah. He doesn't say that you have any fulfillment of Yetziat Mitzrayim. He doesn't say anything that it adds to the Seder, but you should do it. It's optional if you want to do it. Then it's good to do. He doesn't even say it's good to do. He just says if you want to do it, you could do it. It's even less than it's good to do. The perspective I find most interesting, which brings us back to the beginning, where we talked about the fifth language of redemption, Vehiveti, is the position that we see here in the Ravid, who usually argues with the Rambam on a number of matters, but in this case does not do so. And he says, he responds to the earlier Baal HaMa'or, who said, right, remember earlier the Baal HaMa'or said, there's the thing of the fifth cup, we reject that perspective. The Ravid says, no, the fifth cup makes perfect sense. Ubevada yesh smach leminhag hazeh. There is a justification for this minhag, this tradition of having a fifth cup of wine. Midivrei Rabbi Tarfon, she'amar chamishi omar lav halal hagadol u'mitzvah lasot kedvarav. This idea of having a fifth cup is based in Rabbi Tarfon's perspective that we saw in some versions of the text. V'hadalad kosot samchua be'agada keneged arba ge'ulot v'lakachti v'galti v'yisalti v'hutzeti. The 4 cups that we drink correspond to the 4 languages of redemption that we saw earlier. The hey, and the fifth, kvar samchuhu behagada keneged vehedeti. This is perfect. The fifth cup that some people have accustomed to drink lines up with vehedeti. Yeah, so if I could pick and choose and decide which Rishon was right, I love this one. This is excellent. And he adds, v'tana kama nami. The Mishnah, which says you should have no fewer than 4, he says, lo yifchetu lo midalat kosot kamar. You shouldn't have less than 4. Aval ha-mosif aleihem chamishi, if you add a fifth cup of wine on the Seder night, harei ze meshubach, it is praiseworthy. So this is stronger than the language of the Rambam and some of the other Rishonim. Not only is it an option that you're allowed to do, but if you have a fifth cup, that would be praiseworthy. It would be great because you would be corresponding to the fifth language of redemption, the Heveti.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And it makes perfect sense. So I'm going to summarize briefly the positions that we saw so far, and then we'll go to our contemporary practice. So far we saw, first, a dispute about the text of the Talmud. We saw the position of the northern French Rishonim, Rashi, Rashbam, Tosfot, who don't have a text of the Talmud that says five cups. For them, five cups doesn't exist. It's possible they would have known about this text, because they felt a need to reject it. But you only feel a need to reject the text if someone else has it. But it has no authority for them. There's no such thing. We saw the perspective of... Now, within those who have such a text, we have a number of versions, sort of stretching from the Baal HaMa'or, who says that that position is rejected. We don't follow it. There is no fifth cup, practically, even if there was, according to some positions in the Talmud. To Rav Yosef Tovelam, who says, if you want a fifth cup and you're thirsty, go ahead. To the Rambam and the Rush as well, who think, it's voluntary, you could choose to do it if you want to, but it's neither here nor there. And finally, the most affirmative position is the position of the Ravid, who says it's praiseworthy. It's Harezah Meshubach is a great thing to do, it's a mitzvah, but it's not obligatory. You don't have to do it. Four is the minimum that you have to do. Five is this nice bonus points. And this practice that the Ravid brings is actually was an older practice that historically existed in many communities prior to the Rishonim, but it's at this point going to be a little too difficult to go into the entire background of that. Now, if the Ravid is so compelling, which I think he is, and I think you agree, it lined up with the Vehaviti, it's the fifth Lashon, it's beautiful, then why, when we look at the Shulchan Aruch, this authoritative compendium of Jewish law, not only does he not say to drink a fifth cup, he totally ignores the discussion. He says, Achar arba kosut, eno rashai lishtot yayin. After the four cups of wine, you are not allowed to drink more wine. Elamai, you can only drink water. According to the Shulchan Aruch, not only is the fifth cup not a thing at all, it doesn't exist, it's ignored, it's neglected, it's also prohibited. Eno rashai lishtot yayin. One is not allowed to drink the wine. And the Rama, who brings Ashkenazi practice, does mention, umishu istinis otav harbe lishtot. If you have, you know, a certain physical need to drink wine, or you just want to drink more wine, yachol lishtot kos chamishi, you could drink a fifth cup, v'yomar lav halal hagadol. I'm going to zoom in a little bit, because it's a little bit small on the screen. If you want to drink a fifth cup, have a fifth cup and use it for halal hagadol. If you want. So it's sort of a minimalistic position. Where does it go? Where does the fifth cup go? It's so prominent earlier, it appears in most versions of the Gemara, and it seems to be authoritative, or at least legitimate, according to most Rishonim. What happens to it? So the following, I think, is a really nice idea historically, and also sort of philosophically. The first four languages of redemption are about leaving Egypt. The afflictions of Egypt, you're being removed from the afflictions of Egypt. You're being removed from your work. And we will be redeemed with a outstretched arm. We will be taken to God to be a nation. All of those four languages are languages in the past. They're all things that God did for us and have been completed. We've been fully redeemed from Egypt. But the fifth language of redemption in the following pasuk has not been fully completed. Ve'eviti etchem el ha'aretz, I will bring you to the land, asher nasati et edi latet ota l'Avraham l'Yitzchak u'Yaakov, that I raised my arm to give to our forefathers, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And I think most important, v'natati ota lachem morasha, I will give it to you as an inheritance, as your land. So this pasuk refers to the Jewish people entering Israel and taking it. It doesn't say eternally, but I think implicit in the idea of morasha, the idea of an inheritance, is that it's eternal. So the first four languages have been fully completed. We've been fully taken to be a nation to God. But at this point in our history, we do not have Eretz Yisrael in the way that we want to. And I think this actually explains historical development too. In earlier periods of history, our connection to Israel and our connection as an autonomous people was stronger. And then over time, and over extended periods of time in exile, it moves from a fifth cup of obligation, according to Rabbi Tarfon, or to a fifth cup of Hareza Meshubach, or a fifth cup that's voluntary. The tradition exists, but diminishes over time. And I think it might be, further, the basis for what you mentioned at the beginning, the Koshel Eliyahu, the fifth cup of wine that we leave on the table. That we can't have the fifth cup and drink it as a celebration of our redemption, because we are not fully redeemed in Israel. But we can leave it there as a zecher, as a remembrance to, and perhaps a prayer for, our ultimate redemption in Israel. I mentioned two groups of people, by the way, that do have this tradition of drinking a fifth cup. Yemenites, who generally follow the position of the Rambam, who I mentioned before, is at least okay with a fifth cup of wine. We saw that position in the Rambam. And Italians, who, for whatever reason, Italians generally have an interesting collection of traditions. But there are some. There was one other Rav who tried to make the fifth cup prominent. And that was Rav Menachem Mendel Kasher. Without getting into his biography, after the State of Israel was founded, and after Jews sort of reclaimed Israel in the way that we have nowadays as part of modern Zionism, he made a push, an unsuccessful push, to bring back the fifth cup. Because if the fifth cup lines up with Veheveti, it lines up with entering the land of Israel, then a real religious Zionist, someone who really believes that the State of Israel nowadays is part of our ultimate redemption, will want to bring back the fifth cup. We've been redeemed, so Veheveti, the fifth cup, becomes very appropriate. Rav Kasher was ultimately unsuccessful. The government made no formal move towards the fifth cup. I wouldn't be surprised if there are still Zionists these days who do drink a fifth cup. But at this point, it's mostly relegated to, I mentioned Yemenites, some Italians, and also some Hasidic communities as well. So I think that sort of like Zionist narrative of the fifth cup is very powerful. This idea that there is an ultimate redemption that we're looking forward to, and the more of a Zionist you are, the more you think this redemption is already happening, and the more likely you are to pursue a fifth cup of wine. So that covers, broadly speaking, the halachic issues surrounding a fifth cup of wine as a sort of bonus to the four cups in various ways. I'll take a second now if you have any questions, and if you don't, I'll take a few minutes to share one, I think, very cute anecdote that's part of this discussion, even though it has very little halachic weight. So if you have any questions?
No.
Excellent. So we'll continue now. There's one other position that I think is very interesting to look at, and it's the position of the Maharal. The Maharal, like I said, is a 16th century Jewish philosopher who in some ways was foundational to a lot of modern Jewish philosophy. But for our purposes, what matters is this Haggadah. This Haggadah, based on the Maharal's commentary on the Haggadah, was published in 1905 in Warsaw. And in this Haggadah, I printed out here the introductory page of the book, there is reference to this fifth cup of wine. He says it's praiseworthy to do it. And it mentions here, before drinking the fifth cup of wine, there's no bracha, you don't say borei pri hagafen, but you do say this little benediction. If you allow me to translate it, again a little small, so I'll zoom in a little bit more. Hineni muchan zuman, I am prepared, lekayim mitzvat kos chamishi, to drink the fifth cup of wine. Shehu keneged, besorat hayeshua, shamar kadosh baruch hu liyisrael. It lines up with the promise of redemption that God gave to Israel. What promise of redemption? Our pasuk. Vehiviti etchem el haaretz. I will bring you to your land and give you ultimate redemption. So the Maharal in this Haggadah that was printed in 1905 takes this perspective that we have been developing, that this fifth cup existed, that it lined up with our ultimate redemption. And Maharal goes so far in the 16th century to bring back this custom of drinking the cup of wine after it was basically neglected in the Shulchan Aruch, and in this period of time it was essentially neglected. The Maharal brought it back. And he said at this point, Rosh Habayit, only the head of the household would drink this cup. Rosh Habayit levado yikach koshal Eliyahu hanavi. He will take the cup of Eliyahu, koshal Eliyahu that we mentioned before, the yishte be'aseba below bracha. You will drink it, you won't make a bracha on it, but you will drink it leaning. So the Maharal makes this connection between the koshal Eliyahu that we have nowadays and this fifth cup that existed earlier on in the period of the Rishonim, and also connects it to this ultimate redemption. I think it's beautiful. It's a fascinating, fascinating passage. But there's a problem with this, which is that the Maharal also has a commentary on Pesach and a commentary on the Haggadah called Gevurot Hashem. And in this passage, we'll just jump to the end, he quotes this discussion of the fifth cup, and then he says, "V'ein anu nohagim b'kos hay." We do not have this tradition of having a fifth cup of wine. So the Maharal, in his commentary on Pesach, says, don't have a fifth cup of wine, but in his Haggadah, it says that not only is there a fifth cup of wine, but it's a fifth cup of wine that we drink, or at least that the Baal HaBayit, the head of the Seder, drinks.
The head of the house.
The head of the household, exactly. How do we reconcile these two pieces of the Maharal? It's very challenging to think of a way to reconcile these two. He explicitly says that we don't have this custom, and then in his Haggadah, he explicitly says to do it. It's very difficult. This is the interesting tidbit of it all. I mentioned that this text was published in the year 1905, and in this introductory page, it says it was published by Yehuda Yudel Rosenberg. He mentioned some of the other books that he wrote. He happened to be a very intelligent, erudite scholar who wrote commentaries on very difficult passages of the Gemara. Mesechta Nedarim, for example, I mentioned before. And Rabbi Yehuda Yudel Rosenberg also published a number of other interesting works. He published in 1909 a book called Nifla'ot Maharal. The same person, the Maharal Prague. It's a bunch of legends of the Maharal, and it includes the story of how the Maharal made a golem to protect the city of Prague, where he was living at the time.
Yes, miracles.
I'm sorry?
Nifla'ot, miracles.
Exactly, right? So a number of, like, great miraculous stories of the Maharal, including, most famously, his building a golem. Mm-hmm. And it also includes, among his literary work, is a story in Hebrew called Choshen Mishpat Shel Kohen Gadol, the Kohen Gadol's breastplate. I'll just very briefly share some of that story as it appears, and then we'll get to the punchline of it all. So the way the story works, it's a story of how the Maharal was involved in recovering the 12 precious stones that were in the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol. Let me just read this paragraph, actually. It's an English translation, or summary of this passage. Evidently, the 12 precious jewels of the Choshen Mishpat had somehow made their way to England, where they were kept at the Belmore Street Museum in London. In the year 1590, the Maharal was a 16th century figure, 1590 was towards the end of his life, the Maharal discovered that the precious gems had been stolen from the museum, and he went to London to locate them so that they could be returned to the museum for safekeeping. Once he was in London, the Maharal pretended to be an antiques collector, and in that guise met someone called Captain Wilson, who turned out to be the thief who had stolen the gems. The Maharal offered to buy them from Wilson, and they agreed on a price. They also agreed that the actual transaction would take place 2 weeks later, giving the Maharal enough time to come up with the astronomical sum of money he needed to buy them. The transaction never took place. During the prescribed two-week period, the Maharal generated constant mayhem for Wilson through the medium of Kabbalistic miracles. We mentioned Nifla'ot Maharal before. By the time the 2 weeks were up, Wilson agreed to give the Maharal the precious jewels for nothing, and the Maharal was able to return them to the museum. Fascinating, fascinating story. But the problem with the story is that in reality, it actually has nothing to do with the Maharal. Or with Rabbi Rosenberg, who cited this story. And let me...
Excuse me, in this anecdote, why did he decide to give him the 12 gems for nothing instead of the astronomical sum that he had in mind?
Yeah, after being sort of harassed by the Maharal's constant Kabbalistic miracles, he agreed to give them back for free.
Kind of like Moses... dazzling Pharaoh with all of his miracles.
It's true. There's some nice Pesach parallel here. I agree. but the problem with this story is that it's not actually original to this text. It's actually a piece of contemporary fiction from Rabbi Rosenberg, who lives in the early 20th century. It was a piece written in 1899 by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. as part of the Sherlock Holmes mysteries called The Jew's Breastplate. So, and just to, the text doesn't change the names of the characters in the story, right? The character is Captain Wilson. Captain Wilson is the original name as it appears in the Sherlock Holmes novel. The only thing that Rabbi Rosenberg changed was the name of the protagonist, who is now the Maharal, as part of his stories about the Maharal. But otherwise, he seemed to feel comfortable taking this English story, translating it into, excuse me, into his Hebrew version, and publicizing it to his community. Rabbi Yehuda Yudel Rosenberg, excuse me, was a forger. He made up stories. So he made up this story, or he, you know, really plagiarized the story from Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. And he also, and this is clear, plagiarized these other texts about the Maharal. The story Niflaot Maharal, these miracles, this Haggadah of the Maharal, is plagiary. So when we look at this Haggadah of the Maharal, we say, how is it possible that he drank 5 cups of wine? It helps to remember that Rabbi Yehuda Yudel Rosenberg made up the entire story. And we don't give it any weight compared to the works that we know are the Maharals, like Gvurot HaShem. Now, people didn't know that the Maharal, that this was made up, and there were at least a number of followers of the Maharal, or aficionados of the Maharal, who saw this and were like, wow, there's this custom drinking a 5th cup of wine? It's fantastic, it's phenomenal. But of course, it's also fake. And so, this is not a piece of halakhic weight, I would say, to justify drinking a 5th cup of wine. But it is a very interesting piece of sort of Jewish historical trivia about this period. Just to give credit where credit is due, this part of the story I got from a book called Mavericks, Mystics, and False Messiahs by Rabbi Pinny Dunner. It's a really excellent book, and this is one of the passages that he shares, excuse me, about Rabbi Rosenberg and his forgeries of this passage of the Maharal. So this is sort of parenthetical to our main halakhic discussion, but something that you can't talk about a 5th cup of wine without talking about this. It's just too perfect.
So basically, we are left with the impression that it is permissible to have a 5th cup of wine, and yet another place, it's forbidden. So where does that leave you?
So where does that leave me personally? That's a great question. I've never had a 5th cup of wine at the Seder. Now, what I will say is that if you look back on our earlier sources, right, we have the Shulchan Aruch, who generally represents Sephardic practice, where he says you can drink wine after the 4 cups. After the 4 cups, it's prohibited to have a 5th cup of wine. Part of having to do with
You're the head of the household.
No, he doesn't say anything about that.
Yeah.
Right? He says you can't drink anything after the 4th cup of wine. It's part of this idea of ending the night with the afikomen, ending it with a taste of matzah. You can't have any other drink except for water, he mentions. The Ramah does say that if you are an Isthmus or you want to drink extra wine, you can have a 5th cup. It's not a practice that I've ever seen. So at this point, I wouldn't feel comfortable taking on that practice without, you know, consulting with my own rabbis to see how, you know, where it falls. Remember, there is a cost to it. It's not just a bonus of an extra cup of wine. It also means that we're not ending the night with the matzah, with the afikomen. So, in order to sacrifice that, I have to be confident enough about the 5th cup of wine being legitimate. And I'm not there yet.
Before afikomen.
Well, then it wouldn't be a 5th cup. Then it would be a 2nd cup. Or 3rd, I guess. But bearing in mind that this 5th cup, whether it's a 5th cup that we drink, and there are those who do, whether it's a 5th cup, a Koshal Eliyahu, that represents this 5th cup, this ultimate redemption. I think it's a very powerful idea for us to bear in mind on our Seder nights.